This is a reading from my book titled No Place, and I'm selecting a section toward the beginning of the book when I was a young adult and a new student at the University of Minnesota. The next day was the first day of classes. I arrived late to chemistry and had to take a seat in the front row of an auditorium that held about 250 students. Sitting just down the row from me was Dennis. What were the odds? There must have been at least 10,000 students taking freshman chemistry. This time, I determined, reaching out was not going to come from me. But as the days passed, we began to nod in acknowledgement and sit next to one another. The following week, I ran into him at the library. He happened to be sitting in the same reference room where I always studied between classes. Was this merely coincidence? Or did God have a purpose in these improbable meetings? I wondered. We began to make small talk, sharing insignificant details about one another. Like me, he was also on the work-study program. We were among students who needed financial help and were hired to work on campus in various departments. My job was in a greenhouse on the St. Paul campus in the Department of Agronomy and Plant Genetics. I cross-pollinated alfalfa plants for research projects hour after hour alone. Dennis was a chemistry lab attendant, working a window where students lined up to check out test tubes and Bunsen burners. At least he got to see live human beings. Several weeks into the quarter, Dennis approached me after class to ask if I would like to go to the youth group that met at his assembly on Saturday night. I didn't want to seem too eager. The memory of his rudeness in the admin line still smarted, so I archly replied, "I'll let you know tomorrow," as if I needed to check my busy calendar. Making him wait would be good for him. The following day, I demurely announced I would go. His response was quick and warm. "Good. I'll let Jim Upton know so he can pick you up from your dorm." Jim was an elder who worked with the youth group. I grossly misunderstood his invitation. Jim would pick me up? I assumed he was asking for a date. How could he have been such an insensitive idiot not to know this? Although he was socially clueless, he did have a reason for asking. Later, I learned he was vice president of the youth group and in charge of recruiting warm bodies. Bah! Smoking with humiliation, I told him to forget it and stormed off, leaving him with a "what have I done" look on his face. That night, I reconsidered my response and asked myself, "What do you really want from life?" And then, "What should I want?" I longed to find a special person with whom I could share life. Not that I necessarily expected this boy to be the one. My quick temper and hostility seemed to seriously handicap chances of finding anyone who would stick around long enough to learn I had one or two appealing qualities. This could easily become a poison that killed any friendship. At the same time, I wished I could love and follow God closely enough so all these silly distractions could be avoided. As I examined my reaction to Dennis's invitation to the youth group, my response seemed to underscore a certain churlishness of character. I thought about needing a more generous attitude toward people, even toward those who offend me. I seemed disproportionately more hostile and angry than the situation called for. However humiliating, I determined to apologize for being a bitch and promised to attend the study. The next day I told him I changed my mind and would go after all. It's a good thing God is patient toward us, because even as I agreed to go, I was still annoyed enough to look for a way to publicly shame him. When I climbed into Jim Upton's car to go to the meeting, Dennis was in the front seat chatting up another girl. He was obviously interested in this art student from Philadelphia, as they animatedly compared the classes they were taking. As I sat in the back seat with two high school girls, I felt invisible. At the meeting, I was pleased to find others I had known from my years of attending Bible camp. At the end of the evening, I walked out with another boy who offered me a ride back to the dorm. By then, the art student had left Dennis's side and moved on to more promising prospects. He suddenly took an interest in me again. "Hey, where are you going? You came with us," he demanded as Keith and I walked out the door. That was my moment. I paused and stared him down. "What's that to you? Just because I came with Jim Upton doesn't mean I need to leave with him." Everyone around laughed, and so did I, knowing with that little exchange I had paid him back in full. The following Monday, as I studied in the library, he walked in with an armload of books and sat down next to me. I smiled. It appeared he was willing to overlook what I had done on Saturday night, and I was willing to overlook his inept invitation. Despite a rocky beginning, our hearts began to thaw and seeds of friendship grew. Our shared classes and study times at the library became something I looked forward to. We studied chemistry together. I began attending the same assembly he did. Growing up with the same fundamentalist background lent an important understanding of one another, and we grew closer. Looking up to see him walk up the steps of the library to meet me did something to me I wasn't expecting. This happiness, this talking when we should have been studying, this reluctance to part at the bus stop. What attracted me to him were characteristics that have remained over the years. His approach to life is more linear and objective than mine. This complements my more intuitive nature and love of risk. It pleased me that he was intelligent and actually enjoyed conversations about things that mattered. We agreed that making Christianity vital and even radical was important, but we had no idea how or where that was happening, or even if it could make a difference to anything. We just wished the Christian faith was more relevant to all of life, not only to the privatized spheres of religious practice and morality. We had no idea we were beginning a journey into a spiritual shakedown together. Dennis and I spent the following summer together. We were like otters, children on endless playdates. On weekends when it rained, we rolled down the hills of the park and rose sopping wet and crazy. When it was sunny and hot, we ate picnics on the beach and swam at a lake. We rented bikes and chased one another down trails. We read together on the couch and went to church on Sundays. That winter, we kissed at the bus stop and didn't care who saw. One special Sunday, I decided it was time to impress this boy with my ability to cook. He would be so amazed. I knew he would love me forever. I had heard that the way to a man's heart is through his stomach. Ridiculous, but I sort of believed it. Sundays were a great eating day in my family, and I planned to carry on that tradition. Our family would arrive home from a long morning of worship, wild with hunger. The moment the door to the kitchen opened, a delicious wall of roasting meat and garlic, savory enough to put Julia Child on her knees, would greet us. Mom was always a blur as she appointed tasks. We rushed to heat rolls, set out butter and jam, toss the salad, slice the roast beef, stir the gravy, mash the potatoes, and plate the blueberry pie. I would be the same. That's what I planned for this boy. I would produce a feasting experience like he'd never known, which was a pretty low bar to jump since his mother was a disinterested cook. I thought all women cooked with gladness and skill, but his mother never stood in the kitchen with confidence. Her food was sad and gray compared to my mother's gorgeous feast. Years later, I would hear his father sarcastically tell his mother to get the recipe as he chowed down at another woman's table. For Dennis, I would introduce a new level of cuisine, like it was the easiest thing on earth. In my mother's kitchen, I learned to do many things well under her supervision, but I had no idea how much her presence stabilized my execution. Away from her, my experience wasn't nearly enough to match my conceit as I planned our little Sunday menu. For one thing, I failed to consider that my mother was cooking for a crowd while I was attempting to cook for two. When my family left the house on Sunday morning, there would be a 7-pound roast in the oven. All morning it sizzled away, and by noon it was perfectly rare in the middle, tender and glazed on the outside. The drippings made at least a quart of delicious brown gravy. The roast I put in the oven on Impressing Dennis Day was the size of my fist. It was all I could afford. When we arrived back from church and opened the door, we were engulfed by the smell of charred meat. I ran to the oven and pulled out a shrunken hockey puck. Not one to give up, I cut it in half to find any bits of the tough gray strands in the middle that were somewhat edible. I scraped the burned fond off the bottom of the pan to deglaze and make a little gravy. After it thickened, I poured it into a dish and set it aside while I mashed the potatoes. I asked Dennis for help in carrying the dishes to the table. He lifted the plastic gravy bowl from the electric burner where I had placed it. Having forgotten, the burner was still on. The bottom of the bowl stuck to the surface as the sides pulled up in long strings and gravy flowed through them in a river and disappeared into the middle of the stove. Toxic fumes filled the air. I gasped and yelled, "No!" Dennis anxiously raised his eyebrows in a question of what I would do next. I burst out laughing, and relieved, he joined me. There was no gravy to salvage, but we polished off the mashed potatoes and gnawed the meat. We spent the afternoon scraping melted plastic off the burner and cleaning out the mess beneath it. A disaster, but it didn't take long to rectify that first impression and seduce him with my cookies, pies, breads, and roast beef dinners.